So as I said, I recently resurrected as chairman of the department, during which time I didn't have a lot of time to do a lot of research. So when I was invited to come here, I said, well, you know, don't have any sort of off the press results. So I'm going to be talking about our results that are maybe 2 or 3 years old, but nevertheless, again, since I was chairman, I didn't get to do a lot of the conference circuit, so a lot of these results haven't been presented yet at conferences. It's joint work with Luciano Buono at UOIT and former postdoc of mine, Jun-Sun Choi, who's now a professor at Seoul Christian University in South Korea. So we're talking about delay differential equations. These are special cases of what are called retarded functional differential equations. So I wasn't sure what the mix-up of the audience would be. I'm just going to spend a few seconds maybe going over what the framework is. Essentially, they generalize the concept of an ODE, and they include, of course, it's a generalization, it does include ODEs as a special case, includes delay differential equations, whether discrete delays or distributed delays, as Suan just talked about, certain types of integral differential equations, and many more. So there's a functional analytic setup or framework for these types of equations, and usually it involves defining a phase space, which is the space of continuous functions from some interval minus R0 into either Cn or Rn, depending on what your specific choice is, and uniform norm. We define some, for some function here, which belongs to, notice here that goes from minus R to some capital T, not zero. This is intentional. So some function that's defined from minus R, it could be to infinity. We define this kind of a shift operator, which basically shifts the function by an amount T. And what this does, it basically, you look at this function from minus R T, and you fix a window from minus R to zero. And what you're interested in is by translating this thing to the left, you're just interested in the portion that lies in this window. And that's the portion that lies in this phase space. So as you're following around here, these sort of the evolution in the phase space of this function that belongs to this larger space here. So an RFDE then, you start with some well-behaved, smooth enough function that has a domain inside of this phase space going into Cn. And it's such that the instantaneous rate of change of x is equal to some functional of this xt. So basically, it's some function that defines not only at the value of x at t, but out of all previous values from t minus r to t itself. So that's a general definition of an RFDE on D. And we say that a function x of t is a solution on minus r capital T with initial value phi in x, if and only if, of course, it's a function, it's a continuous function. Xt, so this translate always lies in D, and that x satisfies this equation 1 for all time in this interval, and the initial condition is this function. So as such, then it's an infinite dimensional phase space. So it's an infinite dimensional dynamical system. Just give you an example. Here's an example. You can have a bounded linear functional from space of continuous functions into Cn. Using Riesz's representation theorem, you could represent it as some kind of an integral here where eta would be some matrix-valued function of bounded variation. And then this would be an example of a linear retarded functional differential equation. A more specific example is what happens if eta is, let's say, the Heaviside function, so that these d etas now become delta functions. And then what you get basically is a standard delay differential equation. So these are the types of equations that I'm interested in studying. Unlike Suan, I'm not going to be looking at distributed delays. I'm going to be concentrating specifically on the discrete delay case. And before I do that, just some general theoretical remarks. These kind of equations have been looked at for a long time, work from Hale and others. So the theory is very well developed. You have existence, uniqueness, regularity of solution results. They behave exactly like abstract ODEs on an infinite dimensional phase space with an associated semi-flow. equilibrium points have stable, unstable, center, invariant manifolds. So all of the standard results of dynamical systems apply to these types of equations. And consequently, most of the tools from dynamical systems theory can be adapted and have been adapted, so whether it be normal forms or bifurcations. So I'm going to be concentrating a lot on these two types of behaviors in this talk. So the center manifold, as I mentioned, there is a center manifold theorem. I'm just going to look in the scalar case. So these delay equations, you could have, as Suan had, a system of many coupled neural nets or neural cells. In this talk, I'm just going to look at a case where you have x as a scalar valued function. Okay, I'll talk a little bit at the end what happens, why we haven't looked at the general case yet, what are the impediments, and then we'll have some comments about that. So this, you can look at this as a general retarded functional differential equation. So here's the linear part, and here's some nonlinear term. Smooth enough, assume that f of 0 is 0, the derivative of f at 0 is also equal to 0. And this implies that x equals 0 is an equilibrium for 2. So we could be interested in studying questions about stability and bifurcations of this equilibrium. So in the previous talk, we talked about the characteristic equation. So if you're interested in stability, you plug in an exponential ansatz into this equation. You look at the linear part, and what you end up with is this characteristic equation, which is not algebraic for a delay differential equation. It's typically transcendental. Depending on eta, it could be easy or hard to find what the solutions are to this equation. So the center manifold theorem then is suppose you have this set capital lambda, which is the set of all solutions to this characteristic equation with real part equal to 0. Suppose this set is finite and non-empty. This is redundant. Look at the direct sum of the generalized eigenspaces of corresponding to these set of eigenvalues. Suppose it's finite dimensional. Suppose the dimension is C. You have a basis, then C elements 4P. So these are all elements in this space capital X that I defined at the very beginning of the talk, continuous functions from minus R0 into R. Then there exists a C by C matrix B whose spectrum coincides with capital lambda, and a C-dimensional center manifold tangent to the center space P at 0, which you can write as a graph over the center space. And this is the reduced dynamics of your infinite dimensional dynamical system on this invariant manifold. So you get an ODE, a C-dimensional ODE, that's invariant and contains all of the non-exponential dynamics, if you will, of the system near the equilibrium point. Here, this matrix M is a C by 1 constant matrix. I didn't want to write it down. The important thing is that you can compute it from the element of your basis of your center subspace and whatever this measure is here. So if the other eigenvalues have real parts strictly less than 0, then of course this is attracting all nearby solutions, and this ODE describes the asymptotic dynamics near the equilibrium point, just as like the regular center manifold theorem for ODEs. So chronologically, this is kind of backward. This is the problem we studied in 2008. We kind of looked at the linear problem after we did the nonlinear problem. That was basically based on the interest of the people that was working with at the time. So I'm going to spend some time talking about what I call the realization of multiple hops in scalar DDEs. So the question is the following. So it's kind of a sort of a backward question. Suppose you give me a set of purely imaginary numbers. I want to know if I can find a delay differential equation with m delays such that its characteristic equation has these eigenvalues. Yes? Little m? They can be completely arbitrary here. So you give me n numbers, I want to know if I can find some other numbers, a1 to am. I don't know how many these need to be. I don't even know if I can find them at all.
Okay,
okay? It'll turn out that n is equal to n, but we don't know that a priori, okay? So I want to be able to find, can I find, presumably with the smallest number of delays possible, to be able to realize this spectrum. So why would you want to do that? Is because we know that sort of the more frequencies you add into a multiple Hopf bifurcation, the more complexity of the dynamics you can have. So this can have implications from a modeling point of view. So depending on how many delays you decide to include or neglect in your model, you could have an impact on the range of possible dynamics in your model. So this is sort of making a link between number of delays in the model and number of critical eigenvalues you can achieve. So let me do some bit of a history here. So this is sort of the question here in layman's terms. How many delay terms are needed in a scalar DDE to realize the linear part of a prescribed multiple Hopf bifurcation? So that's a general question. So if you just give me one purely imaginary eigenvalue, then this is a straightforward computation. You can just work this out like in 2 minutes with a pencil and paper. You can actually find the solution explicitly. So you have some coefficient here, scalar coefficient in front, minus 1 to the j plus 1 omega. You actually have infinitely many solutions, countably infinitely many solutions. And you have these sort of delay terms here, 2j plus 1 pi over 2 omega. So this is just basically writing down the characteristic equation and solving it, separating the real and imaginary parts and equating things. What I want to point out is this is a scalar equation. So we already know that scalar equations, scalar ODEs don't have complex eigenvalues, but adding a delay term, you can get an imaginary eigenvalue here. Other results there's this famous book, Delay Equations, Functional Complex Nonlinear Analysis by Dyckman, Van Hills, Verdun, Lonel, and Walter, where they look at this type of scalar equation. So one of the terms is not delayed, the other one is delayed, and they show that this type of equation can have at most 2 non-zero imaginary eigenvalues. There is a paper by Galère and Suan in 94 where they looked at the stability and bifurcations of equilibria in multiple delayed differential equations. The linear part, they looked at a nonlinear model, but the linear part of their model, when you look at this model here, they show that you have Hopf bifurcation points in this A1, A2, tau1, tau2 parameter plane. So one delay seems to give one eigenvalue, two delays seem to give two. The hope is that n will give n, but we don't know that as a fact. We have to prove it. So this is what we proved, Luciano and I. So this is the hypothesis. Suppose that omega 1 to omega n are, this is crucial for the proof to work, linearly independent over the rational. So this is for non-resonant Hopf bifurcation. Then there exists tau 1 positive, tau 2 to tau n positive. So now marry the m is equal to the n. N non-zero coefficients a1 to an, such that the linear DDE has these solutions. So I'm not going to go through the proof, but I want to give you the idea of the proof, because I think some of the ideas are maybe a little bit interesting. So we need to prove solvability of the following system of 2n equations in the 2n real unknowns, tau 1 to tau n, and a1 to an. So what I've done here is I've written the characteristic equation, and I impose that it be solved simultaneously for I omega 1, I omega 2, I omega n, and the complex conjugate, and I just rewrote that in matrix form. Okay, so each line of this matrix equation corresponds to the characteristic equation for one of the frequencies. Okay, now let's look at this system. Obviously, the bottom half block is just the complex conjugate of the top half block, so there's not any real content in that equation. But the most important remark and what makes the proof work is the following. Because of the non-resonance of the eigenvalue, if you look at each column of this matrix here, look at the terms. They're exponentials minus I omega 1 tau 1, e to the minus I omega 2 tau 1, e to the minus I omega n tau 1. If you let tau 1 vary over the reals, then these columns generate some kind of a manifold which is dense on some kind of a curve which is dense on an n torus. And it's the same for each of these columns. As you vary tau 1, as you vary tau 2, the second column generates something which is dense on another torus, and finally the last column generates something which is dense on another torus. So the idea is we can't solve this. It's too complicated to solve for the tau and A as is. So the idea was to do the following, is to embed this problem into a larger problem, or actually include torus angles. Okay? And I try to solve this larger problem and try to see if I can use some kind of a neat trick of density or something to solve the other problem. So this basically amounts to looking for the zeros of a map which goes from an n-fold n torus cross Rn. So these are the coefficients a1 to an in this factor here. Each of these factors corresponds to one of these tori into R2n. Want to solve f equals to 0. So the idea is to want to use some kind of an implicit function theorem argument. In order to do that, you need to find one solution to which you can anchor your analysis around. Luckily here is that you can kind of eyeball one solution. When you look at this long enough, I just rewrote the coordinates here for convenience, what you can show is that there's a special point on your torus. You look at that, the first component here is the angles are all minus pi over 2. The other ones are all minus pi over 2 except the last one, which is plus pi over 2, and you keep putting a plus sign up this diagonal here. Why this point, I don't know. I mean, just the way it works. And you have here some special values of the A, which is a rational linear combination of the omega. So in particular, this means that they're not equal to 0. That solves this larger problem. Now, if we know for a fact that these dense curves pass to this point, then we'd be done. But of course, we don't know that. So what we do then is we look at the Jacobian matrix of this, and luckily it has full rank. You can prove that it has full rank. So then you use an implicit function theorem argument. You use, well, the fact that the non-residence of the eigenvalues means that all of these columns fill this torus densely. You're going to be able to approach this point as close as you want. Use some transversality results to be able to then conclude that there are infinitely, countably infinite, many solutions in a tau space. We don't find an explicit formula for them, but we prove that there is a solution by this kind of a trick. Theorem 2 in that same paper is kind of a persistence result. Suppose you have these n linearly independent over the rational frequencies. Then there exists a neighborhood of this point in Rn and a smooth mapping from this neighborhood into the space of delays and amplitudes such that the characteristic equation is solved for all points in this neighborhood. So not only do you have a non-resonant half point at this particular point here, you can also move around this point and still have multiple half bifurcation, which may or may not be non-resonant. Okay. So the proof of this uses some of the same ideas as theorem one. So embedding into a larger problem, etc. So now I go back in time with my postdoc Yun Sun, where we studied the nonlinear part of this problem, multiple half bifurcation in scalar DDEs. So again, I want to put down the equation. So this is linear part, nonlinear part. Suppose you know that this has purely imaginary eigenvalues, and now we know, we kind of know from the previous work that how that works, depending on how many delays you have. You do a center manifold reduction, and you get this equation here that I had down earlier. It's a c-dimensional ODE. And the question I want to point out here is the observation I want to point out is the following. This C could be large. Example, if I have 2,000 delays in this term, I could have 2,000 imaginary eigenvalues. So the center subspace could be 2,000 dimensional. But what I want to point out is if I do a Taylor expansion of this thing here, F here is a scalar valued function. M is a fixed C by 1 matrix. So it's not at all clear that if you give me an integer L greater than or equal to 2, that any L degree polynomial from RC into RC can be achieved by truncating this at order L. There's not a lot of degrees of freedom in this term. There are a lot of restrictions because you're starting with a scalar equation with F. So I want to illustrate with an example to convince you. So So suppose that in my Steeler equation, this f of t is a quadratic term and only has one delay. So what's the most general term, not a quadratic term of x, which only has one delay? Well, it's this one here. There's only one degree of freedom here. A is the scale that scales it. So when you do the center manifold reduction, you look at this nonlinear part on the, of the center manifold equation, what you're going to get to quadratic order is this scalar A times some homogeneous quadratic polynomial map from RC into RC. This is fixed. It's independent of A and only depends on tau and on your basis here. So this is fixed. So at most, you're generating a one-dimensional space in this space of C of quadratic polynomials from RC into RC. This space of quadratic polynomials from RC to RC could have very large dimension if C is large. Okay, if you have two, if C is two, you have all terms that are of the form x squared, xy, y squared on the first component, x squared, xy, y squared on the second component, so you have six degrees of freedom here. What I'm saying is that you can only generate one degree of freedom in this. Now, why is this important from an application point of view? Is anybody who's done bifurcation theory knows that when you want to study a classification or an unfolding of your bifurcation, usually the equivalence classes are given by conditions on the nonlinear terms. So some inequalities on the nonlinear terms. What I'm saying here is that the deck is kind of stacked against these inequalities being satisfied in general for these things because you don't have enough freedom in the nonlinear terms here. You can't expect that you'll be able to sort of map surjectively onto your unfolding space by this kind of a quadratic term. So that's a problem. Now, a way around this, of course, is to incorporate more delays. So suppose that your quadratic term here depends on, so these exponents here, i1 to ij, they're all integers being either 0, 1, or 2, and their sum is equal to 2, so this is a quadratic. And we have basically j different discrete delays. If you do the center manifold reduction in this case, then potentially you have more degrees of freedom here. So the question then is, well, how large does j have to be in order to be able to sort of say I map surjectively onto the space of quadratic polynomials? And what if I want to map surjectively onto the space of cubic polynomials after that? Or can I answer questions regarding these types of problems? So this is kind of a general realizability problem. Again, it's been studied for some at least 20 years by Hale, Faria, and Magalhães. So this is sort of the general setup. Suppose you have a C by C matrix whose eigenvalues have real part equal to 0, a bounded linear functional L such that the set of all eigenvalues with 0 real part corresponds to the spectrum of B, an integer L greater than or equal to 2, and a degree L polynomial map from RC to RC in normal form with respect to this matrix B. Does there exist a delay differential equation with, let's say, j delays, such that the center manifold equations, if I truncate this Taylor expansion up to order j, up to order L, I will get this given polynomial here. So it's a question of surjectivity. Given an f, can I find a delayed equation that maps via center manifold onto this equation? So the answer to that is yes. It was answered in 85 and 86 for scalar equations, Faria and Magalhães in 95 for general systems. And the sufficient condition is that the number of delays should be equal to the dimension of the center subspace. If that happens, then you have sufficient, you can always find this, a polynomial Q here that will map onto this F here. So J equals C is sufficient generically for all F and for all integers L, for all degrees of polynomials. The same number of delays, okay, doesn't matter to what degree you want to achieve the polynomial, it works. It's sufficient, is it necessary? And answer is no in a certain sense, and the sense is the following. So again, for Magalhães in 96, if you apply their idea to the Hopf bifurcation is a two-dimensional center manifold. So in their case, you should need no more than two delays in order to be able to achieve the normal form of the Hopf bifurcation. What they show, though, is that If you just have one delay in this nonlinear part, then the center manifold reduction generically realizes what I would call the amplitude part, this part here of the normal form to cubic order. And for Hopf bifurcation, that's really what determines the bifurcation, is this sort of transversal equation. This just describes how fast things are moving around the invariant circle, but this is really the one that characterizes the bifurcation. So if you're willing to sacrifice this degree of freedom here, B, then you only need one degree, one delay to map onto the radial part of the normal form. Luciano and Jacques Bellard in 2003 did the similar kind of analysis, but for non-resonant double Hopf bifurcations, or plus or minus I omega 1, plus or minus I omega 2, non-resonant, so that you have a four-dimensional center manifold. So by the Faria-Magalès theorem, four delays are sufficient for realizability. But what Belair and Buono show is that if you only have two delays, again, you can realize the amplitude part of the normal form. This is the normal form written in polar coordinates. The amplitude part can be realized, so these four coefficients can be realized with just two delays. So that sort of suggests maybe a general theorem, which is the following. Let me sort of what the scheme is, and then I'll sort of state the theorem. So the scheme is the following. You have some delay differential equation, linear part, nonlinear part that depends on J delays. The critical spectrum here has P simple non-resonant imaginary eigenvalues. You do the standard manifold reduction, you get this type of an equation here, so you get an L degree polynomial plus higher order terms. You can do a Planck-Ady-Birkhoff normal form transformation, put this into a particularly simple symmetric normal form. It commutes with an action of a torus group. This is a well-known result if you study the works of Golubitsky, etc. It's a TP equivariant normal form. You're going to exploit this normal form now to use polar coordinates and decouple the amplitude part. So now the question is this process surjective, and for what value of J is it surjective? So the theorem then that we proved is the following, that this process is surjective for any fixed integer L greater than or equal to 2. This process is surjective generically if and only if the number of delays is greater than or equal to P, so that's half of the dimension of the center manifold, which seems to generalize the results that we had earlier for Bellard and Buono and Ferrier and Magalès. So the proof actually uses some of the same ideas as what we use in the linear analysis, so density of irrational flows on torus, embedding into a larger problem, implicit function theorem and transversality. So these results generalize, again, these two results on Hopf and double Hopf in the following sense. Here you only had one eigenvalue, here you had two. We generalized an arbitrary number of non-resonant eigenvalues. And if you go back, when I talked about these things, I said it realizes the normal form up to cubic order. You don't say anything about higher order terms. In fact, we have a result that works for any degree of nonlinearity, not just cubic. Future directions, obviously, so I talked about scalar equations. What happens if it's non-scalar? Well, for the linear analysis, of course, the characteristic equation is complicated. So I mentioned that you get all kinds of powers of exponentials. It's not clear. When you have a connection, just one connection matrix like Swan had, you can sort of put that in upper triangular form. But if you have many connection matrices, you can't simultaneously do that for all of the matrices. So there's no apparent structure that we can exploit, except in very special cases. I have a master's student now, Gaël Jourdanou, who's trying to put some order into that, but certainly not anywhere close to a general solution. For the nonlinear problem, there's issues with this matrix M. So in the scalar case, this is a C by 1 matrix, so very easy, its rank generically is 1. In the n-dimensional case, it'll be a C by N matrix. Then you can have different possibilities for its rank. So you kind of have to do some kind of a combinatorial enumeration of all possibilities. So it's not a conceptually harder problem, it's just technically harder from a computational point of view. And of course, you have all kinds of problems with resonances. The non-resonance was a crucial ingredient to all of our proofs. Without it, we couldn't have proved these theorems. It doesn't mean that they don't hold. If they're resonant, just that our proof doesn't work. I suspect that the term doesn't hold if there are resonances, but that's just sort of my intuition. Multiple eigenvalues, so if you have Jordan blocks, for example, nilpotencies, so these are all open questions in these types of problems. Okay, thanks again to the organizers.